Jenny Borneman is the Children's Advocacy Program Supervisor at the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh. She graduated from Carnegie Mellon University with a degree in creative writing and minored in biomedical engineering. Though her work isn't directly related to her educational background, she has always had a deep interest in child psychology and the sphere of social work.
I always had like quite an interest in like children and child development and psychology and that kind of thing. So for a while, I was just reading like lots of books on that kind of stuff. So I read like Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. And I read Why Does He Do That? It's like a big book about like why do abusers abuse people? And just kind of lots of different books that talked about like psychology and that kind of stuff.
This interest eventually brought her to the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh, where she began as a child advocate.
I started out as a children's advocate, and I had like a history as like doing some child care. So I started there and then just kind of moved up to supervise the program. We basically do a whole lot of different forms of advocacy for the kids at our shelter and the moms there. So part of that is doing child care to help the moms that they have time to do other stuff that they have to do and to get some time to spend with the kids, like work with them directly. Then we also help with like coordinating school transportation and school enrollment, helping connect kids with like children's counselors and giving people kinds of resources for like finding long-term child care or behavioral support. We also give physical resources like clothes, diapers, school supplies, that kind of stuff. Usually our days are pretty broken up to have like some child care hour slots and then other time to get other stuff done. So usually like start the day, check emails, check like our case management notebook to see if anything has been happening in the shelter that we need to be aware of, any emergencies going on. And then we'll have childcare for like 2 hours in the morning. Let's get to check in with moms, see the kids. Some days we'll have like structured activities going on for the kids, and some days it's more like free play kind of thing. So if we have like free play going on, they kind of can lead it. We have all kinds of different toys and activities down there, arts and crafts and Legos and trucks and anything they want to use. So we kind of let them take the lead on what they want to do. And then when we have structured activities, we coordinate with lots of like outside organizations. So sometimes we might have like a workshop or a party going on. So like we might have like Museum on the Move is when museums visit, or like little birthday party things going on, or like music workshops, dance workshops, science workshops, whatever. So the activities might depend on that kind of thing. But so we'll do some child care for a little bit, and then that usually lasts about 2 hours. Moms pick up their kids, and then we'll get into like whatever else is going on. So if we have said that we would do like an intake for a new family, then we'll go meet with them, talk to them, explain our program, figure out what kind of resources they need. If somebody like asked for clothes for their kids, we'll be going around looking for that, grabbing that kind of stuff. Reaching out to other organizations that want to do more work with us. We'll do a lot of case management time. So meeting about like, this kid is having this issue and this family's having this kind of problem. So what can we do to help improve it? So lots of things like that is what's in a typical day.
The shelter acts as a stepping stone for many of the women that benefit from its services. However, the circumstances that bring women and their children to the shelter are expectedly complex and difficult to understand. What kind of conversations do you have with children about their trauma, and how do you go about having those discussions?
We definitely try to let them take the lead on it. Like, we don't want to push kids to talk about things they don't want to talk about. But so every family that comes in, I mentioned before, we do an intake for. And a part of our intake is asking, like, we have, like, a little trauma history section that kind of asks, like, what each child witnessed or experienced. And we always let moms know, like, they can go into as little or as much detail as they're comfortable disclosing to us. But it gives us a better idea of, like, what kind of care that child might need. And since we see, like, such a wide range of kids, the, I guess, like, variety of how much they will talk about it or are even capable of talking about it can certainly vary a lot. But we'll definitely have kids, like, talk about things that have happened to them in the past, talk about dad, talk about home life. So we always, you know, discuss it with them whenever they bring it up, but we don't want to push it. I'm a big proponent of like giving them, you know, open-ended questions and trying to give, labeling, like feeling. So if somebody's saying like, we're going to see like dad this weekend. Like, I'll just be like, oh, okay. Like, how do you feel about that? And you know, if they're saying like dad did X, Y, Z thing, like, and it's, you know, something bad, I might be saying like, oh, like that sounds really scary. Like, or were you scared or were you upset? And kind of just do it in a very questions led way that tries to be empathetic, and see like, you know, where they take the conversation.
At times, she has to fully assume the role of a mandated reporter.
So if they're saying something that's new information to us, like we didn't find out about during the intake, usually I seek supervision from, we have like our own CYF team at our shelter. It's not like the actual CYF, Children, Youth, and Families Department. It's like a team of people to kind of help you navigate that system if you're navigating it. So I'll often seek supervision with like the head of that and be like, hey, a child disclosed this to me today, and like see if she has advice on whether or not it should be child-lined. Because sometimes since women are coming to our shelter, they might already have like an open case, like the abuse that the kids are experiencing might like already be reported. It might be already be a closed case. It might still be an open one. So we're mandated reporters. We're supposed to report all child abuse, but I always seek supervision with her about it. And then we'll also talk about it like as our team to be like, what kind of extra support might this kid need? And then also like make a plan for how to talk about it with mom, like saying like your kid mentioned like X, Y, Z today, to make sure that they're aware of it. Lots of times it's something that the mom already knows and has already heard about. So that kind of thing.
Through her work, Borneman has come to recognize certain behaviors that are shared amongst and can somewhat identify child victims of abuse.
But some of the things that I'll like notice going on with kids that have experienced it, sometimes it's like in things that the kids say, like especially like when you're working with toddlers, everything they're saying, they had to kind of learn from somewhere. So sometimes you'll hear them using like words, phrases, sentences that you're like, you didn't think of this like sentence on your own as a toddler, like you heard it said. So, you know, like if like a 2-year-old is making like really violent threats to somebody saying like, I'm going to kill you, like screaming, I'm going to kill you over and over. It's like, where did you learn to talk this way exactly? Or another example, sometimes you'll see it in like family dynamics. So like if we get like a family with like multiple different kids, different genders, different ages, you might kind of see a breakdown of like a daughter that's playing more of like a parentified role, like a people pleasing role, and then like a son that maybe is kind of playing a role that imitates dad's behavior, that can be like more like aggressive. Other things that I'll notice is like kids, the way in which they play. So sometimes kids kind of use their play to like model things that have happened. So I've seen like toddlers have like really specific play habits where they're like, okay, I'm the doctor and I'm bringing you the baby, and the baby was separated from its mom at the hospital and they won't let her see her anymore. And it's like, okay, you're 3 years old. So where this whole story come from? So things like that, I think, can be signs of it. Some other signs that we'll see, I would say, there are some kids that can be very touchy in ways where you're like wondering, I guess, like what kind of physical boundaries have been expressed to them, but then they're kind of expressing outwardly to the world. So like the way in which they might be like touchy to others is something that I'll see. Something else sometimes, like how reactive kids are, like how easily like scared or not scared they seem to be by certain things. You know, I've definitely like, you know, seen some children where it's like you play peekaboo and they're like immediately like freaking out. You know, like you seem to be kind of more escalated and feel like a lot more things could be like a trigger for something scary. I think, you know, emotional responses can be all over the board in shelter, where some people seem to be like a lot more kind of disconnected. They're sort of like not really reacting to anything. They're kind of numbed out. Some people seem to be in very fight or flight where, you know, you might say something to them that you think is very simple, like normal thing, and they might get really escalated and have a big reaction or feel very like angered by it in a way that surprises you. I think some people can be like a lot more anxious. So we can kind of see it in a lot of different ways. Yeah.
Though each experience of abuse is distinct in and of itself, according to Borneman, there are shared struggles in overcoming this form of childhood trauma.
Since we are like doing childcare, I think a lot of what we see is like the way in which they'll interact with other kids. And so we definitely see a lot of like fighting in specific ways, where I am like a very strong believer in modeling for kids, where like the way you treat them is how you're teaching them to treat others. So it's like I always approach kids in a way of like, I'm never going to yell at a kid because I don't want to teach a kid how to yell. The kids that have been raised in different households, like, you know, might be more likely to be like physical, more likely to hit, more likely to like scream at or like bully or be mean to other children. So I end up seeing it a lot in those ways. All of us have PCADV training. PCADV is Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And so that's like a little bit more broader instead of like exactly like what kids are going through. Like we'll talk about like moms too, but I feel like there can be quite a bit of overlap. So it kind of prepares you for the fact that like survivors of domestic violence might be acting in like X ways, but like kind of reframing those ways, like to be considerate of like how their situation shaped that. So I guess like an example of that is we try to use strengths-based language. So it's like, if somebody seems to kind of be trying to manipulate a system, are they manipulating a system or have they learned that they need to do whatever they can to get their needs met? So we kind of learned about that kind of thing. And so it's like kind of seeing everybody's behavior as like, what did you need to do before you ended up here to feel like you were safe or to feel like you were going to get your needs met? And I feel like that kind of training coincides with like how I see kids. Like, you're acting in this undesirable way, but this might be what you had to do when you were at home to feel like you needed somebody to pay attention to you at all, or to feel like you would be safe if like this or that happened, or it might have been the only way that you were like taught to deal with conflict or problems.
For parents navigating how to best support their children through recovery, Borneman suggests leading with grace, extending it to yourself and to your child.
But if I was giving advice to a non-abusive parent that's trying to like help their kids after, things that I would say are to try to always lead with like empathy and kindness and patience with your kids. Again, modeling, like using the kinds of behaviors that you want to see in them. So talking to them in the way that you would like them to talk to other people, expressing boundaries to them in the way that you want them to be able to express boundaries, labeling emotions and saying like, I can see that you're really upset right now, and what can we do to help you calm down from this, etc. I would say, I think oftentimes it can be hard with kids in moments of like conflict when your kid is really escalated to have to kind of like de-escalate your child when you might be escalated yourself. And sort of formula that we use in our childcare facility a lot is like, if a kid comes up to you and says, this kid did this to me, hit me, stole my toy, whatever, my immediate response is never to like immediately try to fix the problem. It's always like, oh, how did that make you feel? Oh, it made you feel sad. Do you want to go talk to them about how it made you feel? Okay, you do. Do you want me to come help you talk to them about it? And kind of lead that way, that kind of pushes them towards being able to label their emotions and being able to communicate with other kids instead of trying to like fix things for them or react to their frustrations. So those are some things that we use and some things that I like to convey to parents to be kind of trauma informed with their children and be aware of the fact that, you know, their kids are still learning and this is their first time in the world. It's really, really hard to be a kid. And it's especially really, really hard if one of the people that was supposed to like raise you and teach you how to interact in the world wasn't doing a super great job of it. And you kind of have to unlearn a bunch of the things that you just learned how to do. I really feel like the core of a lot of the work I do is empathy and patience. And so I guess my hope is for parents to be empathetic with their children and also for those children as they grow up to have empathy for themselves and empathy for others. And be aware of the fact that, you know, they might be struggling a lot, but it's not their fault that they were in the situation that they were in. So you can take it slow and be patient with yourself. Recovery is a very long process, and they didn't ask to be in it.
Despite its weight, Borneman says this work has changed her perspective for the better.
I feel like it's kind of increased my empathy, I think, not to be like, I'm so empathetic. I think it takes a lot of empathy to do this kind of work. And the more you do it, the more you kind of see it like everywhere, the way that every person is kind of being shaped by a million things that happen to them that's out of their control. So it's like, even if we have a mom in the shelter who the way that she interacts with her children maybe isn't the way that I would ideally love her to interact with her children, we'll still know like more about like her background. So we might know about like childhood abuses that she's experienced, and we might find out like this person was actually in a foster care system and actually experienced this kind of abuse from family and then from multiple partners, and this person now has like these mental health issues and these other health issues, and this person's on these medications and on and off these medications that affect their mood and behavior and ability for their brain to work in different ways. And this person's in a shelter because they're in a crisis situation, and crisis can cause people to act in all these different ways. So even if I'm seeing someone like doing something that I don't really like being unkind to a child, it's like, I still need to be able to reflect on like all the things that have brought them to this moment, and the ways that, you know, if these things that were out of their control were different, if they had been raised in a different family, if they had met different people, if their brain was born working in a different way, that they could be a completely different person. And so I kind of feel like I feel as though I can't judge anyone for anything ever because of like how great the depth of like all the things that impact you are and how much you like don't really know about what someone else is going through.